You're listening to the Big Three of B2B Leadership Podcast with Mike Faherty, where world-class business leaders share their secrets for personal, organizational, and market growth. Gain powerful insights from industry leaders that have been tested by the fire.
Well, welcome to the Big Three of B2B Leadership. I am really excited today. I've got the pleasure of being joined by Jeb Blount. Jeb is the author of 12 wildly popular books on sales and business, including my favorite, Fanatical Prospecting, a book I've read, probably reread a few times. He's also a keynote speaker and the CEO of Sales Gravy. At Sales Gravy, Jeb and his team transform organizations by helping companies really reach their peak performance, the organizations as well as the people involved. And so I'm excited to talk about sales and business growth with Jeb. Welcome, Jeb. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me here. I appreciate it. And for your audience, by the way, and this is just hard for everybody, my last name is actually pronounced Blount, as crazy as it sounds, because when you see it spelled, it looks like it's spelled Blount, but it's Blount. So a lot of people call me Philly Blount so they can remember, just in case you want to remember me that way. So I know it's weird. If I could go back from the very beginning when I first started writing books, I would have done what Emily Blount did and take the O out of my name so that everybody would be able to get it. So, but just in case, but thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
You know, that's all on me. And I apologize. Thanks for correcting me. I've read several of your books. I've been following you for years, but I don't, as you said that to me, I thought, I don't know if I've ever heard his name said out loud. So that's my mistake. Thanks for that. Well, what I wanted to do, I always like to kind of get to the person a little bit before we kind of get into the meat of the contact. And you're obviously a thought leader in the area of sales, marketing, leadership, and a lot of other areas. But I'm curious, could you tell me what your first sales job was? What was the first time you had to sell a product or service to someone? Do you recall what that was?
Well, my first sales job actually wasn't a job. I didn't get paid for it, but I worked for the yearbook like in high school. Okay. And so my first real sales job, like I really went out and got money from people, was selling yearbook ads. And I fell in love with sales selling yearbook ads. It was my junior year. I joined the yearbook because I wanted to meet girls, and there were lots of girls on the yearbook, you know. So I mean, as a teenage boy, I'm like, it's only me, I'm the only guy, and it's full of girls. This would be pretty good for me, as you know, for getting dates, what have you. So I joined the yearbook, and Ms. Rouse, who was our yearbook advisor, sent us out on the street to sell ads, and she gave us a quota, $300, gave us an ad sheet, you know, each page, full page, whatever. And I lived in a little tiny itty bitty town called Harlem, Georgia. So I go out to downtown Harlem, Georgia, walk into Hall's Hardware, walk up to the counter where Mr. Hall is sitting. I reach out my hand because Mr. Rouse had taught us how to do that. We reach out the hand and I said, "Hey, Mr. Hall, I'm selling ads for the Harlem High School yearbook. Want to buy one?" And he said, "Sure." And then he reached behind his counter, and this is the old days, right? So he had bought one of those big business checkbooks out. You know, it's got the big book. And he stroked this really long, like long, I've never seen a long check before. And he handed me the check. And at that moment, like total sales crack. I was addicted. So I went to Gurley's grocery store. I went to Chicken Taters. And you haven't lived until you've had Chicken Taters. So I go all over the place. I sell the used car places, go to the town next door where my wife is from. I go down the street to Augusta, Georgia, much bigger city, and I end up coming back. I sell $3,000 in ads, and most people hadn't even hit their quota. Most people had gone home and like gone to their mom, and so you buy an ad for the yearbook. And at that moment, like I was totally hooked, and so I never, like everything else I did from that point on was either connected to sales or was getting me to a place that was connected to sales.
Well, that's an interesting, you know, story, because there's this huge debate that happens among salespeople and sales trainers and sales leaders is there an ideal sales personality? Are people natural salespeople, or is it a skill that anyone can learn? Given that story, you know, what's your take on it?
Well, let's maybe take it a little different. Everybody at some point in their life is going to have to sell something. I mean, everybody. And even entrepreneurs. So a lot of cases, entrepreneurs have a dream. They start a business and then they realize that, okay, I got the business, but this is not Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. Like, they're not just going to show up because I built the business. I got to go out and talk to people. And whether it's an entrepreneur selling, you know, themselves or their business to get venture capital, or, you know, going to the bank and getting a loan, or, you know, somebody who just got out of college and the entry level into any organization, and I explain this to a lot of college kids when I lecture at universities, is you're probably going to end up in sales at some point because you're going to have to pass through that hurdle in order to move into the organization. So everybody's going to have to sell something, and therefore I think, yeah, we can teach people how to sell. The difference is, do you like it or not like it? So if you're selling things and you really hate it, my suggestion is go do something else, because life is way too short to do things that make you miserable. So there are people out there, my wife, for example, who's the CFO of our company, you know, she hates selling. Now, she does it sometimes and she's pretty good at it. If we, you know, we get an inbound lead and there's nobody else to handle it and she takes it, she can close the deal. But she doesn't do a very good job of following up, and like, she's not really driven. And you know, if it's super easy for her, she'll handle it. If it's really, really hard, she'll complain. She doesn't like it. So some people just don't like it. I love it. Like it's the air that I breathe. I'm 24/7, 365. I love sales. So is that something that I was born with? I don't know. It's just something that I do. Now let's talk about talent. So talent does matter. So for example, I love sales. I'm really, really, really good at sales. I also like basketball. I'm really, really poor at basketball. I love it, but I suck at it. Nobody's ever gonna let me play pro basketball. Most people won't even let me on their like YMCA team because I'm that bad. So there are things that I like to do, but I'm not really good at them. And it's not something that I pursue because from a talent standpoint, that's just not the talent set that I was given when I was born. So I do think that there is a talent set for sales, like there's a talent set for accounting, and there are people who were meant to be in HR, and there were people who were meant to play baseball or be CEOs or be entrepreneurs. And I think we were all given these talents. And you know, there's, you know, if you're a religious person, there's one wonderful parable in the Bible about, you know, talents. So which, you know, they were used in a different way, but it's explaining that everybody has something. So whatever your gift is and what your talent is, I mean, that's probably where you should put your time and effort. But that doesn't mean that you can't learn how to sell. And it certainly doesn't mean that in a pinch when you have to, that you can't. I don't think there's anybody who just can't, except for maybe sociopaths. Maybe sociopaths can't, right? And so I think that that's where we get all mixed up. We're like, are you born salesperson? No, there are people who have talent sets that make them more optimized for this particular profession. Just like, for example, if we look at sales as a whole, sales isn't like some, you know, homogenous, like everybody's in sales. There are enterprise level sales, there's inbound sales, there's outbound sales. There are some people who are really gifted at, if the phone rings and someone wants to buy something, like they're great at it. For me personally, the vernacular that I give it is customer experience selling, right? The person raised their hand and they say they want to buy. And your job is to bring them in and create a great relationship for them. This could be on the phone, it could be in a car dealership, it could be selling cell phones, it could be high-end retail. Some people are gifted at that. Some people are really good at strategic, enterprise-level, large accounts. Like they are so good at the strategy, and they have a level of emotional intelligence that allows them to, you know, to put aside the need for instant gratification for a longer term view. So they can work a deal that might take 3 years to get closed because they're good at it. Imagine that you're selling, for example, you work for Boeing and you're selling jets to Delta. I mean, you know, these are longer term processes. They're relationship driven. There are people who are really good at door to door. Right, so these are typically people who are outcome driven. If you were to look at them on an empathy scale, they're probably closer to narcissists than anything else, right? Because you got to be like, there's got to be something about you that's got like, you forget really, really quickly. You go to a door, they tell you no. You go to the next door, they tell you no. You go next door. So there are some people that are really good at that too. I wouldn't last like 10 minutes in a job like that, because I'd be like 10 doors down and I'm like, screw this. This is not worth my time and effort. There are other ways I can make a living that are better than having people slam doors in my face. There are other people who they love it. Like they love door to door. So when we start thinking about that in terms of sales, you got to think about, okay, as I bring people on, what talent do they have? And Mike, I'll give you an example of this. Like if you go to a big company, so I spent most of my career in the Fortune 500 world. When you go to a big company, the entry-level sales jobs, they're hard. Like they typically are high activity, they're hunter-based, you're out there busting your rear end. And why do companies have those jobs? Well, first of all, they gotta go sell bread and butter. Like that's part of the process. but it's also a way to have people work in the minor leagues so you can figure out who can rise, like who can move in the organization. From that group, you find people who are they're really talented, but they're not really like sales is something they like, so you move them into operations. Some people move into marketing. And then some people move into, say, they're selling mid-size accounts. And then they move into regional accounts. And then they move into national accounts. So I ended up, I started at entry level, and I ended up in national accounts. So I'm working on, monster multi-million dollar deals. And if I looked around me, all the people that I worked with in that space were really intelligent. They were really strategic. They had a particular personality set that made them perfect for that. They had a lot of experience because they understood how the organization worked. So in those deals, we weren't selling as much as we were business partners. Like we were consultants walking into our clients. And then we had to expand those relationships over time. There were people that could both hunt and could retain. That's a very hard skill set and talent set to find. So what we were able to do is filter out people that can move into those different roles, and by the way, wanted to move into those different roles. So there were people that moved into, were in hunter-based sales that were like, I really don't like this, but I love the long-term process. Some of those people would become account executives. So they would start, our account managers, they would start managing accounts because that's where they were better. So I know this is a long answer, but it's one of these things that just keeps coming up over and over again, and no one ever answers it. Like, is it talent or is it skills? And so everybody just treats it as some binary thing that's just not true. It's a lot of different things, and it's really complex. But if someone doesn't like selling, they're probably not going to be good at it over the long haul. They can be good at it short haul, right? And if they don't like selling a certain thing or a certain way, they can be good at it short term, but they're probably not going to be good at it long haul. What I can tell you are there are certain traits that make for good salespeople. One of those traits is competitiveness. If you think about it, what do competitors do? So what a competitor does when they get knocked down, right, they get pissed off. That's all. If you really think it from a competitive standpoint, right, they want to win. They have to win. It's to some extent, it's an emotional intelligence trait, right? I win because I have to. I win because you have to win. It's not about money. It's not about anything else. You have to win. And by the way, when you lose and you are going to lose in sales, they just get mad. Like it becomes fuel. So if you just think about that, that's one thing. The other is optimism. So, I mean, it's really hard to be in sales if you're just pissed off all the time or you're pessimistic or everything's going to fall apart. And the thing about optimism is that that optimism has to change. If you're door to door, you have to be the ultimate optimist. Like the next door they're going to buy from me. If you're in strategic sales, you have to balance optimism with a level of pessimism and paranoia because you're working on a multi-million dollar opportunity that's going to take 3 years to close and anything could go wrong. And if you're not looking for the things that could go wrong, you're probably going to lose. And then there's this need for achievement. And I think that probably more than anything, that drives entrepreneurs. It drives authors like me. Like, why do I write books? Need for achievement. Like I write a book and then it's a trophy on my shelf. So, and then, in the need to win, and the salespeople that I find that, work very, very well and have always worked very well are the ones that it's not about money or anything like that, but they dig the recognition. Like they really want to win. And if I go all the way back to the yearbook story I told you earlier, the thing that caught me in that moment was when I revealed that I sold $3,000, everybody went, oh my God. And then they made me the editor of the yearbook. So the prize that I got was I got promoted. That's when I figured out if you can make it rain, right, you get recognized. So I like trophies. I've stood on every stage. I've been to all the President's Club trips, Winner's Circle, you name it. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt, had the trophies, got the checks. And I remember them because that's what I live for. And I think a lot of salespeople live for that. And I think that, long term, if you don't have either some or all of those traits in some measure, over the long term, statistically speaking, you're probably not going to be as good at sales as you could be if you had those traits. And those are things that leaders can hone, right? So you can have someone who comes to you and they have a desire to be competitive, and you can take that away from them as a leader because you suck as a leader. Like you can do that to them. But I think that to some extent, people come into the jobs with those things. You can build that yourself. You can hone it. You need to think about that. But if you don't have that, if you're just not a natural competitor, if you just don't care if you win or you don't win, if you lose a deal and you don't crawl into the fetal position and hurt for a little while, like maybe, you know, maybe it's not the right thing. So go do something else. There's tons of things out there to do other than sales. So just go pick it.
Yeah, there's a lot of easier things to do than sales too. So if you're not really in it to win it, then, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that you can do to make a living. Absolutely. I totally agree. Well, I want to talk about virtual selling. So I know you've recently written a book about this. I want to talk about kind of your thoughts on this topic. Obviously the world has changed over the last several months with the pandemic, and as a result, business has changed too, right? So I'm curious, what's your advice for business leaders and salespeople today who's gotten thrown off their game right now and they're struggling to kind of find their footing in this virtual world?
Well, my advice is find your footing. I mean, I know that sounds really, you know, stupid to say that, but my advice is the problem is if you think I've been thrown off my game, I'm having a hard time finding my footing. The problem is not that. The problem is in your head. Like this is a mindset issue. The thing that is true is that you have no control over what's happened around us. Like the pandemic happened and it just happened. And the world got shut down and we had to shift the way we were dealing with people. That just happened. But the thing is that you have control over your mindset, what you choose to believe. I mean, if you got knocked off your kilter, that should have been 5 minutes. We all got knocked off our kilter. I mean, as a CEO of a training company where 100% of our training was in person, you know, and suddenly we wake up and we don't have any more in-person meetings, you know, for about a day there was panic, and then we did something about it. Like we said, okay, well, this is the situation we find ourselves in. We're going to do something different. And that's exactly what we did. If you're in a situation with selling and you're knocked off your kilter, like you got to make the decision that you're going to do something different. So the difference was, like, for example, there's places right now across the country. Now, I'm in Georgia, so we have a lot more freedom here. I can walk down the street and go knock on business if I want to. But there's other places where you can't do that. Your only option is either to pick up the phone or get on a Zoom call or starve to death. Okay, so I don't have advice for you're sitting around like a wishbone, hoping and praying that it will go back to the way it was before. If you're a salesperson waiting to the end of the pandemic, so, you know, if you're just like, I can wait this thing out, you know, I can tell you that you're doomed for failure. And a lot of us, by the way, we did. Early on in April and May, I'm like, because we were writing virtual selling at the time. I now remember telling my publisher, because we wrote it in 60 days. If we don't get this thing out by the end of June, nobody's going to buy this book because this whole thing's going to be over. I'm saying those words, okay? So I think most of us were like, because I thought, well, the summertime's going to hit and this thing is just going to go away. Like, that's what the virus is going to do. And it didn't. And now you realize, okay, well, we're 9 months in, going on 10 months in, and like, it's too late to be knocked off your kilter. Here's the deal. This is how it's going to be. And oh, by the way, let me explain this, and I'm going to do this in no uncertain terms. What we have been through is a transformational change. We've been through this with the global recession, the global financial crisis in 2007, 2008. We did this with 9/11, right? We did this, you know, when we had, you know, Black Friday in 1987. I can't believe I remember this, right? That was a transformational change for the stock market and the way the stock market works. We did this in the 60s, like the late 60s with the Vietnam War, major change, societal change, civil change. When Pearl Harbor happened, there was change. Like we can go all the way back, right, in our history, and there are these moments in history that create transformational change, where we never go back to where we were before. I never thought there would be this many times in my life when this would happen. Like, you know, the 9/11 global financial crisis pandemic. Like I mean, when my granddad used to talk about the depression, I always remember like this, like that was a once in a lifetime world. That's never going to happen to us again. We have all these things. Well, it happened. And it happened to us three times over 20 years. Think about this. Okay. And right. Every single time it happened, Mike, we didn't go back. There's not a new normal, right? We didn't go back. We transformed forever. Things didn't go back, and it's not going to go back now. So if you're a salesperson, here's my advice. You better learn how to use these new tools, because buyers shifted in the pandemic. Like we took 10 years of progression and compressed it into about 5 months. So buyers are happy to hop on a video call. They're fine with it. And look, let's just get real, okay? In 1876, Alexander Graham Bell made the very first phone call to Watson. Watson, come here, I need to see you. And that kicked off modern virtual selling. I mean, the telephone is still the greatest tool ever. And there's a lot of salespeople that were, you know, that were out there. They were, you know, their whole idea of meeting with people was I would get in my car and drive around in my city. And suddenly they're like, this, what's the phone? Like the phone, I got to call people on the phone. Like, yeah, pick up the damn phone and call somebody, have a conversation with them. It's been around for a long time. We're pretty good at that. So what you have to do as a salesperson is recognize we've moved into a new world, and the new world is going to be blending. What blending is using an omni-channel approach to connecting with buyers where they are. And all this means is if you're a salesperson, wherever you are on the continuum, whether you're an account manager, large accounts, small accounts, it doesn't really make a difference, that you're choosing the communication channel that gives you the highest probability of getting the sales outcome that you desire in that given moment at the lowest cost of time, energy, and money. This is where we are, and this is what has changed. So suddenly, all of a sudden, buyers are more open to multiple ways of communicating. Okay, well, that happened just because that's what happened in the pandemic. Everybody got that, right? Now, as a salesperson, you got to say, okay, how can I meet my buyers where they are? And by the way, how do I choose the right communication channel? Sometimes it's going to be in person. But what if you're a software sales rep out in San Francisco, and you're an account executive? So your SDR primarily going to be by phone, right? A phone or chat's going to be the SDR world. So I love inbound web chat. Fantastic. I'm going to convert those all day long. I'm going to be on the telephone calling people. I'll be using email, social media, what have you. Prospecting is primarily going to stay off video other than video messages. But then sales is going to be video. So if you're an account executive, and we've been working with our clients out there for years, getting account executives to stop hiding behind a demo, like, you know, you never see my face, or, you know, stop doing your discovery calls on the telephone, use a video call so we can get to know each other, we can see each other's face. If you're an inside rep, you've got to blend. If you're an outside rep, you've got to blend. And if you're a leader, what you should be doing right now is getting ahead. I'm not sure where we're going to be in the next 6 months. It's really cloudy for me where things are going to end up. Mm-hmm. I'm the guy who predicted it would all be over by the end of June. So I don't really have a lot of credibility here, right? So
you weren't alone.
So I think if I'm a leader, what I'm doing is I'm taking my entire sales process and I'm thinking about how do we remap the sales process so that we're able to meet our buyers and using the right channel. For example, if you're a business services salesperson, you work locally, you know, you're used to having your, say, first time visits, typically, you know, 100 type relationships. I call you up, set a meeting, come in, meet with you, do discovery, do a proposal, close the deal. So a 3 to 4 call move, depending on the size of the deal. And that's probably, you know, 80% of field sales jobs are probably in that space. Well, why am I getting in my car, driving across town, having a first time visit in person, a visit that typically is going to be 20 to 30 minutes? The whole point of the visit is to get you to be interested in going forward with me and for me to do a little bit of qualification and a tiny bit of discovery. Why would I get in my car and spend 3 hours doing that when I could just do this on a video call? And then I can save the getting in my car, driving across town for discovery when I need to walk through your building, or if I sell copiers, for example, bring in a copier and do a demo on that. Why don't I do that? Because here's the thing. The other thing we have to realize is that coming out of the pandemic, there are going to be two things that are going to happen. One is there's going to be a massive explosion of innovation. So a lot of really amazing things are going to happen, including, like, in the future, and this technology already exists and we're already using it. It's just really expensive. You and I might just put on a headset and, like, we just do this in person. Like, you're sitting right here in my studio and I'm sitting in your studio and we're talking to holograms. It's already exists. We're already delivering training in a virtual reality space. I could easily, with my customers, say, put your headset on. Let's just meet over here. I'll send you a link. You meet there. We're talking to each other just like we're here, but we're 3D. Completely different animal. So you got to recognize that's coming. The second thing is we're going to move faster, way faster, coming out of the pandemic than we were when we went into the pandemic. And so for a lot of sales professionals, for example, if you can't move faster, or, and this is a talent thing and nobody shoot me for this, but if the sales professionals that are lower on the IQ scale than people who are higher on the IQ scale, that group of people may suffer because you're going to have to be able to pull disparate pieces together. You're going to be our disparate pieces together. You're going to have to be able to connect the dots differently. You're going to have to interact with people and do it faster. You're going to have to be able to work across a lot of different textures, a lot of different, you know, imperfections in business. You're going to have to do those things, and you're going to have to do those things at speed. I promise you this. if you can't move fast, you got a problem. And maybe there's one, the third thing is, because we're going to move faster and because we're going to be using these different communication channels to connect with people and connect with more people more efficiently, you're going to be asked to do more. So a salesperson now, for example, who's say a field salesperson, and you do say two first time meetings a week or a day, you're going to be doing six. Because guess what? You can do six if all my first time visits are on virtual. So those are the things that everybody has to be used to. So back to your question, what do I tell salespeople right now? Right now, quit being a wishbone. You're never going to go back. Like, grow a backbone, start using this stuff, learn how to use it, get good at it, master it. And if you do that, you're going to master the future. You're going to future-proof yourself. If you don't, you're going to come out of this and you're probably going to be slinging coffee at Starbucks.
Right. The whole point, my contention has been that this is an advantage. You know, I do 95% of my selling over the phone, right? So whenever I'm meeting with clients, it's almost always over the phone. They're usually in other cities. It's difficult to reach them. And so most of what I do has been over the phone for the last 10 years. I would much rather have a Zoom call. I would much rather have a video conference call with a prospect than a phone call. They say that communication is what 55% of, or the visual is 55% mm-hmm. of the communication. You know, there's all kinds of numbers out there, but let's all agree it's significant, right? So the more I can see my prospect and get a feel for their body language and who they are as a person, and they can see me and get a deeper sense of my passion and competence and all the things that I want to try to communicate, that's easier to do when they can see me. I feel like it's an advantage. I feel like the good salespeople are going to be more successful and are going to be able to leverage this in a way that has a positive impact on their business. The ones who struggle will, to your point, will probably continue to struggle or maybe even struggle at a higher degree.
I agree. I mean, like exactly what you said, it is a competitive advantage. And you know, that I would say that we've had a similar experience. So prior to the pandemic, we've been selling in a virtual space for 13 years. I mean, this isn't like selling this way isn't new to us. But what we found was that before the pandemic, we would have most of our sales calls would be by phone. So we would sell, I mean, we were selling, you know, six and seven figure, you know, training deals on the phone. And we would have some video calls, but even if we had a video call, usually we were the only people on video. And we were used to that. There was nothing wrong with it. We want people to see us because we want them to be able to draw congruence from the words that we're saying to how we're saying those words. So that was normal for us to do that. Following the pandemic, I would say 90% of our sales calls are by video. In fact, I can't recall having a phone call in the last 4 months. Everything I do, the only people I call are my existing clients. Like if I get an existing client and I'm having a conversation with them about, hey, I got a question about this, or there's a reporting on the LMS, or you know, somebody's missing this, those are easy. Like those are all phone calls. I don't spin up a Zoom meeting so I can solve a quick problem. But our sales calls with new customers, they're almost all on video and they want to do that. Like they're happy for it because it feels good. Right in front of me, Mike, the camera, the array that I'm working on right now, this is a $3,000 rig in front of me. That's $3,000. Why do I have a $3,000 rig in front of me? Competitive advantage. The way that I'm able to interact with you, look into your eyes, make eye contact, the quality of this, to be able to switch. I've got a little switcher down here, so I'm able to do like mini production all by myself. The reason on the other side, there's a producer sitting out there, and I have three full-time producers on my team, people who have degrees from film school who work for my company. And there's like a television studio on the other side. It's because it's a competitive advantage. Like it puts us ahead. It's why people hire us. This room that I'm in, I mean, if you just take this one room that is built from the ground studio up with this wall of books behind me, which is, you know, kind of fun, but we can change the set out anytime we want to. This is real. This is not, you know, this is not a something that we built. This is $50,000 to build this room. Why did I do this? Competitive advantage. Now, the average salesperson doesn't have to go spend that type of money. But if you're the average salesperson, you need to be reaching into your bank account, at least spend $1,000 and build out a set so that when you're standing in front of your client, they feel like you're there. That's even why do I stand up and you can see my hands, right? Because we talk with our hands. And when people can't see your hands, at the subconscious level, their brain is wondering, what are you doing with your hands? Because believe it or not, as human beings, our hands are deadly weapons, right? That's what we kill people with. If we're, you know, if we're so inclined to kill people, right? There you go. See, so this is why we do this, to get the competitive advantage. So let me give you a quick analogy. So back in 1993, I am a briefcase carrying on the street selling business services sales rep. It is classic field sales job. I prospect in the morning. I set appointments for the afternoon. I go out on first-time visits. About half those visits turn into discovery meetings, and I do presentations and proposals. I close the deal. I make lots of money. So basic. And it's high velocity, got to do a lot of things, and I got numbers I got to hit, and I'm traveling. I got my territory is 4 hours one side or the other. And PowerPoint comes out. So Microsoft releases PowerPoint. I remember the very first time I saw it. There was one of the people in our office got it. Like, one person got it, and it was in boxes. Like, this was where software, like, you got it on, and you installed it on floppy drives, like in a computer. And I didn't even own a computer. Like, that, you know, the computers were things that were in offices, not in your house. So I saw it, and I'm like, that's amazing. So I asked my boss, I want PowerPoint. I need this for my presentations. And my boss said no. So I started going to Kinko's, or FedEx, or Kinko's at the time, not FedEx office, but I went to Kinko's and I'd rent a computer. So he wouldn't buy me PowerPoint, but he would pay $50 an hour for me to rent a computer so I could work on a computer and use that to like build PowerPoint presentations that I could at least print out. Like, I would do that. But I'm like, I need PowerPoint. I need this and I need a laptop. Now, 1993, a laptop weighed about 400 pounds, right? And it was, so I need a laptop, wouldn't get it to me. So I'm like, I need this. I need it because it's going to give me a competitive advantage. I'm already better than everybody else. Wouldn't do it. So I went down to Best Buy and I spent $5,000 and I bought the laptop and I paid for the software and I bought everything that I needed and I learned how to use PowerPoint. And then I was at least at that point, my sales manager, like the poor guy, like he was, I'm the worst in the world. Like, I asked for everything all the time. At that point, he'd given up. So I'm like, I need to get a projector. And he said, well, you can't buy a projector. These things cost 20 grand, but you can rent one. So I would go into meetings, Mike, and you gotta be, you know, here I am. The projector was in a suitcase about this big, right? It was like on rollers. And then I'd have a projector. So I'm holding one of those really long, like tube projector, screens. So I've got a screen and I've got this laptop thing, you know, and I've got my bag over my head and I'm wearing a tie and a suit and I'm like hauling myself into these meetings. And then I would, yeah, so, and
you know,
yeah,
exactly. Degrees too.
Yeah, so July, right? And now I've got like, and I'm setting up in their office. Like, I got to set everything up. So I'd get there early and set everything up, you know. And there's just like this, you know, this 24-year-old kid, like in your conference room, setting all this stuff up, you know. And the projector's going, woo, you know, this is really hot. So they walk in, and I put my proposal on the screen, PowerPoint. And back then it was really cool to have things move around. Like, I would have things spinning in. And I mean, and even early on, by the way, learn how to embed video in them. So I would take a video of our plant and then I figured out how to put it in the PowerPoint itself. Like, little stuff like that. I won every single deal. Like, I would go in and I would hit PowerPoint and it didn't make a difference what my competitor brought in. It was so new, so different, so eye-catching, so incredible that I didn't lose anything. And that was until everybody caught up with me. I mean, it took, you know, a couple of years later, everybody's using PowerPoint. You know, today, back then we would do like the formal proposal we would do in a Word document. Nobody does that anymore. Everything's in PowerPoint. But I spent the money and made the investment to give myself a competitive advantage. Same thing today. Like, if you're spending the money and you're spending the time getting good at this, you're gonna have a competitive advantage. No different, by the way, than VR. Every day, every single night, I go do virtual reality exercises. We've already built a virtual classroom. We've already like embedded videos in it. We've got the ability to do workouts and create cones around people so we can have breakout groups. We have this amazing amphitheater that we've built. And when you go in, total immersion. But you can't just walk in as a trainer and like use it. You got to go in and get good at it. Like, you got to be so good, no one else. So every single night, I put my headset on, I disappear into a world that I never want to come back from because it's so awesome, and I practice. This is what salespeople need to be doing right now. Make the investment. You can get a competitive edge by being good at this and understanding that you're creating an emotional experience for the person that you're dealing with through the video. And you're right, man. It's the eyes, and it's how you look, and it's how you show up, and it's how you express yourself. That's what's going to set you apart.
So you touched on it a little bit, but I'll just ask the question directly. I mean, is in-person face-to-face selling dead?
No, not even a bit. Because here's the thing. There's not a human being on earth that's going to argue that, you know, that face-to-face selling, right, our face-to-face communication in any way is a worse way for human beings to communicate than, say, text messaging. Because it's not. Like, we're human beings. Like, we know that the best way for us to get together is face-to-face, where we can have a conversation, we can see each other, the whole picture. Like, it's easier for us to transfer emotions. Emotional contagion just works better in that environment. We're able to pick up micro expressions around the eyes that are maybe a little bit harder to pick up on a Zoom call. I mean, one of the reasons why I have a piece of glass in front of me, that your eyes are like right where my camera is. So when I'm looking to the camera, I'm actually looking in front of your eyes, and I adjust you on my screen so I can see you that way. But even then, because of the compression in Zoom, I don't pick up all the micro expressions. So sometimes it's harder to, you know, to understand that. So if you think about it, in person's the best way. It's just not always the efficient way. So what you want to do is what we want to start thinking about. This goes back to blending. Is we want to start reserving our in-person meetings for when they matter the most. So if we're going to expend the time, the energy, and money to meet face to face, let's make sure that we're getting the most out of it. We're getting the highest ROI for those meetings. There are a lot of meetings where face to face isn't going to get us any more than a virtual meeting. There are phone meetings where, like I said, you know, if I got a client, they got a problem, I don't like get on an airplane to go solve the problem, pick up the phone and call them, right? Because the phone call is the easiest way for us to get together, collaborate, solve the problem, move on to the next thing. So you got to use your noggin, like use your head around this. And this is one of the problems for salespeople, like you said, that are like off their game, is that the only way that they worked was face to face. And they feel like, for example, they've lost their sight. I can't see anymore because the things that I'm really good at, you know, using my charisma in person doesn't work for me anymore. Okay, well, I get that. I understand it. But it's not actually true. Like, it's just something in your head. It's just what you felt comfortable with. So let's break that down and say, okay, same thing, by the way, for businesses and companies. My biggest hope for companies is they realize is how much inefficiency there is with everybody coming into the office every single day. What we found is that people can work from home and get a lot done. My own salespeople, by the way, since we kicked them out of the office, we kicked them out of our office and we turned their offices into virtual training studios, is what we did. But, you know, so they came back, their offices aren't anymore. They've doubled their sales since I got them out of here. So do we have them come in? Yeah. Do we want to get our we want to see them face to face? Yeah. We're all getting together tonight. We're going to all meet tonight in a socially distanced and responsible manner, but we're all going to get together so we can see each other. And that's on purpose, but we don't have to have multiple meetings all the time in order to do that. So it's all about understanding that we have to choose the communication channel that's going to help us achieve the objective, but at the same time, pick the channel that's going to give us the highest return based on the lowest cost, right? If we do that, then we start getting smart about the way that we're working. And by the way, that's why I say, and I believe, and I may be wrong, but I believe that coming out of the pandemic, we're going to be moving at a much faster pace, blistering speed, much faster than we were before.
Yeah. So when I look at, when I'm looking through virtual selling, your new book, you had a chapter there, and I haven't read it yet. I'm excited to look through it. You had a chapter there that caught my eye, the asynchronous salesperson.
Yes.
Can you talk to me a little bit about what the asynchronous salesperson is?
Yeah, there's a lot of them out there. I mean, probably the biggest offenders are sales development representatives and full desk salespeople who have to prospect. So the biggest offenders are prospecting. So you probably get this. I know I do, but you probably get, I don't know, a dozen or so emails, maybe a day, maybe a week, from people who you think, why don't you just call me? Like, why are you sending me this email? Like, you sent me 4 emails in a row to ask me if you can meet with me, and I'm just trying to figure out, like, my phone number is printed in my books. My phone number is on my website. You can do a search and find my phone number. Why don't you just call me? At least try. Like, I had a young sales rep call me the other day, called and left a voicemail message. It was a good voicemail message. And then sent me an email. And then I gave him a call back. because I was like, okay, at least this person tried. If you send me an email, I'm never calling you back. I just don't respond to emails. I mean, every once in a while, but not very many of them. So what they've done is they're using these asynchronous channels. Text is an asynchronous channel, though it can be synchronous. They'll use social media, like an in-mail, or they'll send an email, or smoke signals. I'm not quite sure what that is, but they'll use those type of communication channels rather than just picking up the phone and calling. A good example of this, Mike, is, for example, sequencing. So there's information in sequencing on the book, but sequencing is using multiple channels in a ordered fashion with different messaging over a particular duration on a targeted list in order to improve the statistical probability that you engage that buyer at the right time. If you engage them, they come out of the sequence. So when we're working with companies to build sequences, where do they typically default to? Well, what email should we send first? And we're like, no, we're not sending an email first. We're going to call first. Because if we get them to engage, they're not in the sequence. Now, the easiest, fastest way to have a conversation with Mike is to pick up the phone and call him. Now, if he doesn't answer the phone, we'll leave a voicemail. Then we'll send an email. Then we'll send LinkedIn. Then we'll call again. Like, we'll do those things. But what if we could get him to call, to just answer the phone? So a good example of this is a company we're working with up in Seattle, an early stage VC with software that they sell to small businesses. They built a sales team of, I think, four people, and they were really struggling. They were not doing very well. So we go through and we break down their process. They had gotten, you know, some bad advice from, you know, one of these I don't know, gurus that talks about, you know, prospecting and automation, that they were going to send a series of 8 emails to these cold prospects before they picked up the phone and called them. So they would send 8 emails and then they would call. Well, I don't know about you, but if some rep sends me 8 emails in a row, especially when the emails have no relevance to my business or me and I know they're completely cold, by the time we get to number 8, I've either blocked you or I'm severely pissed off. So when you call me up and you do get me on the phone, I'm blasting your ass for sending me 8 emails. And I'm like, why are you sending the 8 emails? And they said, well, you know, the guru we talked to said, well, that warms them up. I'm like, look, you're interrupting their day. They're not warm. You're making them mad. So I don't understand, why wouldn't you just pick up the phone and call them? So, well, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, let's try this. And by the way, their base of opportunities, 8 million businesses. I mean, this is how big their target market is. So I'm like, let's just do this. Let's just get some lists. Go pull 100 leads. It doesn't make a difference where they come from. And let's call them. We're just going to pick up the phone and call and talk to the owner of the business. So we did that. So we're getting about a 25% pickup rate. About 25% of the dials that we made, we were able to talk to the owner. And they were like, this is incredible. Like, how'd you figure this out? Like I was some Yoda or something. Like I had done some, you know, Jedi mind trick. I'm like, this is just common sense. Like if you want to talk to someone, the fastest, easiest way to have a conversation with them is pick up the phone, because they're all carrying them on their bodies all the time. Like I never leave I've got mine somewhere around here, right here. I never leave without one. So just pick up the phone. So what we want is people leading with synchronous, lead with the way that you can talk to them. If it were, you know, for example, if you were just dead set that I want to prospect by foot, which is super inefficient, then go knock on the door, then send them an email. Like, go try to meet with them, go talk to the receptionist, leave your business card, and then send the email, right? So pick synchronous. And I just think that salespeople, because they're afraid of rejection and they're afraid of not being able to see people and it's easier to hold people at arm's length, they tend to shift into asynchronous communication versus picking up the phone or hopping on a video call or going there in person, however you want to do it, and actually engaging in a human, you know, a human to human conversation.
I love that. The synchronizing, we call it cadences. So just kind of building out a plan for when is the right time to make phone calls, send an email, connect on social, and just having it orchestrated. Take some of the guesswork out of it and get some consistency. If you can get that consistency, then you can start to measure your results and say, okay, well, this is what we're producing with this sequence, right? Mm-hmm. So how can we accelerate it or tweak it so we can improve and we can manage that so it becomes more predictable? I think it's great advice. So I want to get, we've got a few minutes left, and I really want to get your take on something. I've listened to you talk about it in the past, but that was probably a few years old. So the world keeps moving forward, as we talked about it. We're going through a transformation right now. Where are you today the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, where are you today on social selling?
Well, I think that, again, let's just go back to using an omni-channel approach. So I'm, you know, first of all, I despise the term social selling. And, you know, Brent Tillman, who's a really good friend of mine, she and I've had these conversations before. I just hate the term. I have acquiesced and just said, screw it. You know, nobody's listening to me, so we'll call it social selling. But I hate the term. But social media is an integrated part of your world. You'll read in virtual selling. I say this clearly. You know, if you're not using social selling or using social media, you know, you're an idiot. I mean, there's no other way around that. Like it's a key piece of this. And I'm tired of dealing with salespeople who say, I don't have time for it. Even my own salespeople, you need to be doing it in some measure. And in fact, I wrote the foreword to Daniel Disney, a social selling, you know, guy. I wrote the foreword to his book. So a lot of people think that for some reason or another, because I am bullish on synchronous communication, pick up the damn phone and call somebody. Like I am, like this whole idea that I'm going to get on social media and warm people up before I call them. I don't have words for the stupidity of that. If you need to talk to somebody, pick up the phone, like call them on the phone. Let's say this one more time. If you really want to talk to somebody, pick up the phone. You can find their information everywhere. Like it's super easy to call people. Do that. But at the same time, what social media does and what social selling is about is building familiarity. So the law of familiarity simply says this: familiarity breeds liking. The more people like you, the more likely they're going to engage. So in a sequence, right? So I would put a cadence in a sequence. So a cadence is going to be like, what's the cadence of touches as we go? So am I going to run phone? Am I going to run a play phone, LinkedIn, what have you? So for example, if I leave you a voicemail message and then I send you an email and then I send a connection request on LinkedIn, or even I just go to LinkedIn and click on your, like, let's say I just click on your profile page. So you hear my name, right, on the phone, you see my name on an email, and then you see my face on your LinkedIn page, because LinkedIn is going to send you a note saying, hey, Jeb, you know, you had this many people look at your page. I improve the probability that you're going to engage, because the more familiar I am or you are with me, the more, you know, the more likely you're going to engage. So, but I go back to the very beginning. Like, I don't need to do all that. If I can pick up the phone and call you and you answer the phone, like, I skipped all those steps. So why don't I just do that first? So I think that we have to understand what social selling is social selling is primarily about creating familiarity. It's also about bolstering or elevating your personal brand. So first of all, I want people to see me on a regular basis so I'm familiar with them, because we like things that are familiar. It's like the first time you hear a song and you hear the song the first time, you're like, this song sucks, like that is terrible. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, like you're singing it in the shower. I mean, that's familiarity, right? The more terms you heard it play, the more you like the song. It's just the way that it works. So what we do on social media in particular is we're creating that level of familiarity. People see us. At the same time, we're elevating our personal brand, because we want people to see us as an expert. And we want when people are dealing with us to feel comfortable that maybe we have something to add to the conversation. And by the way, for your future, you know, it helps, because maybe you want to change jobs and employers see you there. So that's good as well. So we're doing that as well. And we do that through, you know, building the right connections with people. So we're targeting people. We're adding content. So we're either curating content or putting original content on, and we're being very consistent. And I think this is where salespeople really miss, is that you need to have time scheduled every single day. Not a lot of time, you know, an hour max every day that you work your social channels, and then you're on the phone, then you're on email, then you're doing those things. You have to do all of those things, and you have to do it consistently every day. I'm not very consistent right now because I'm too damn busy to be consistent on social media, and I feel bad about it. So I think you have to do those things. Then we can start getting deeper into social media. So once we're there, then we can start saying, okay, what about we need to meet somebody? So we can start using social proximity tools to really understand, you know, who can help us get to somebody. I don't often do that because I have this really weird thing called the phone. So I just skip all those steps and I call people. But if you feel like you need to do that, that's a way of getting there. But more than anything, what I like to do with social, if you want to call this social selling, but for me, it's social list building, is that I use it for targeted lists. So for example, who's liking, looking at my stuff, who's looking at my profile, who's looking at my competitor stuff, who's looking at my page, who commented on something that I posted, who's commenting on what my competitors are posting. So I might go to a post you're on your world and go, okay, who's on Mike's post? Who are these people? Why are they there? What's happening? I use some tools like HubSpot for, you know, to listen to what's happening. I can see when people are popping off something we posted on LinkedIn and then they hit our website. And then what my salespeople are able to do is we're able to pull a whole list of those folks. You know, so we're able to even look at companies. So we've got, like, suddenly we've had, you know, all of these people from one company who are looking at our website. That's not a coincidence. Why is that happening? And then let's look at social to see what's going on. This is when, by the way, we begin blending marketing into social selling. And some of those things salespeople should be doing and some of those things salespeople shouldn't be doing. But if you're a salesperson, here's how I feel about this to answer your question. I feel about it like this. LinkedIn's probably the greatest tool that was invented for salespeople since the car. Like, I mean, or the internet, maybe Google, you know, so it's a big time tool. So I look at, we got the car, we got the telephone, we can Google stuff and we have LinkedIn. Put those things together, Zoom, maybe let's add Zoom onto it. Like, I'm, you know, we're living large. Okay. So those are our tools. You need to use it that way. You need to stay away from all the people who tell you that you can show up on social media and cold calling is dead and you can do the whole Kevin Costner Field of Dreams things and you're going to fill up your pipeline. That is complete and utter, excuse my language, bullshit. It will never happen for you. Stop paying attention to that crap. So that doesn't work and doesn't work for anybody except for people like me and you who are public figures and who write books, and it's a marketing play. Works great for me. It's just not working for average Joe who's selling, say, uniform rental services. Your customers are not going to blow up your phone because you're hanging out on LinkedIn. It doesn't work that way. So stop paying attention to that and make it part of a holistic approach in your world to build familiarity, to target prospects, build lists, and to elevate your personal brand. And, you know, and keep you connected. And by, there's one more thing you can do on social media. I think is powerful. You can learn from guys like Mike, who posts brilliant, you know, content on social media, and you can go look at that. So like in essence, you know, for example, you know, salespeople, the people who are listening to your podcast, you know, you can become sort of a virtual mentor for them on a tool like LinkedIn because you're paying attention to it. So you got to think about it that way. And if you do, it's going to work. But here's the thing. If you're not doing it, excuse my language, I've done this a couple of times, but you're a moron. Okay. So you need to be on social media. If you're overdoing it and you think it's going to solve all your problems, you're a moron because it's not a panacea. And it's somewhere in the middle, like that Goldilocks zone, focus there. And at the end of the day, pick up the damn phone and call people.
I love it. I've been saying for years, it sort of predating social media, that when I talk to salespeople who are struggling, I say, look, you're never going to network your way to quota. You're not going to network your way to quota. And it goes for social media. Now, you're not going to social sell your way to quota. Do you need to do it? Do you need to network? Absolutely. Do you need to be on social? Absolutely. You need to do those things. But if you're counting on it to make your quota, you're going to be mistaken. So. Yes. That's awesome, Jeb. Thanks for that. That was great. That's exactly what I wanted to hear from you. Hey, before I let you go, I'm curious, what's next for you? I mean, you're dominating the world. You talk about virtual selling, which I think is virtual selling, but in a VR environment, which I think is virtual training in a training in a VR environment, which I think is fascinating. What else is new? What else are you working on?
Well, I've got two more weeks to finish up my next book. So.
Oh my God.
And I'm laughing at myself because I'm about 4 months behind. We got so busy over the fall. I did, on Saturday will be my 60th keynote since Labor Day. And so it's been like, I can't, and you know, I'm doing virtual training and I'm on camera all day long. So I'm way behind. I'm embarrassingly behind. But on January the 4th, I'm turning in the final manuscript for the virtual training Bible. So all the things that we've learned as a company, everything that we've done here that is, you know, rocketed our business, I'm writing in this book. It won't be like a sister book for virtual selling because it's a completely different genre. So that book comes out, and then I've got a new book right behind that on on sales coaching in a virtual world. So that's coming up behind that. And then right behind that, we've got a book that got put aside because of the pandemic called Business Outcome Selling Strategies, which is a large account, strategic account sales book. That'll be coming by. And I don't know when that may be, 2022 when that finally hits, just because we just got so far behind. So those things are coming. And then virtual training, virtual reality training is loaded up. We're going to start that in January. We have, it's hard to explain. Like, I explain to people and they go, yeah, it sounds really good. And then they put the headset on and they get in and they go, oh my God, like, this is amazing. Like, it is so incredible. As soon as I get into the virtual world. So we are working rapidly toward that world. And then, you know, then there's augmented reality, which is you have the ability, like, you can see augmented reality now. Like, you go to a furniture store and you can hold your phone up and you can actually put a piece of furniture in your room. That's augmented reality. So that it already exists. Doctors are using it. So the Microsoft has a headset, and there's a couple others out there where you put on a pair of glasses. So it looks kind of like sunglasses. And then you can put 3D objects in your room, and the computer will remember where they were. Great for engineering, wonderful for medical. Way too expensive for sales right now. So the headset costs $3,000. So, you know, nobody's going to be signing up for that right now. But that's going to give us the ability to communicate via hologram. So, you know, think, you know, go all the way back to 1978, I think, when Star Wars came out, you know, and Princess Leia is, you know, Obi-Wan, you know, come here, we help us, please, whatever. So, you know, out of R2-D2. Well, that actually is, that technology exists right now. So we're going to see more of that happening. I don't know how that's going to impact training. I think we're probably 5 years off from that, because the cost has to come way down. So the Oculus headsets, for example, the 64 gigabyte model is $299. Okay, well, that's cheaper than a plane ticket. And virtual reality classroom is way better than, you know, than 2D virtual classroom. Like, it's a universe away. So, but it's not for everyone. So if you're not tech savvy, you're going to be really tough. You know, so if you've got like this, you know, this group of like old sales reps that are working in some manufacturing company and they've been around, you know, selling, you know, gears for years, they are not putting on virtual reality headsets and having a training. So I think that we're probably, again, 3 to 4 years off from that. Our goal is to get way ahead of that curve. It takes time to master it. You got to have the people on your team that have the ability to do it. And again, let's go back to competitive edge. When it starts moving, and it starts moving fast, I don't want to be catching up. I want everybody to be catching up with us. And that's why we've spent a mint this year on buying headsets, on working on our virtual spaces, on, you know, practicing every single day. And we get to play a few cool video games in between while we're doing it. So I think that's, you know, that's where we're going. And I think the only thing, Mike, just, you know, as transparent as I possibly can be, I'm really cloudy right now on where we're going to be 6 months from now. So it's one of the few times in my life, like, I was completely determined. I did believe that we would all be done by June, but in March and April and May, I was determined. Like, I knew exactly where we were going to go. There was no hesitation. We're going all in on virtual. This is going to work. I'm just not clear on what the future looks like for businesses, for companies like mine. So I'm having to hedge a little bit right now on, like, where are we going to go? I just don't know. So I'm having to make some kind of weird decisions on how we deploy our people and our resources, you know, as we move forward.
Well, it's a tough time for a lot of people, just from the perspective of certainty, right? We all seek certainty. We're human beings, and so the certainty is at a premium these days. Well, look, Jeff, thank you so much for sharing your tremendous insight and energy with me and the audience today. It's been really, really awesome. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to talk to you more about what you're doing?
Yeah, just go. You can go to salesgravy.com. This is our website, salesgravy.com. You can find me on all the social media sites. I'm at salesgravy, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. My Facebook page is Jeb On Demand. YouTube/SalesGravy podcast is Sales Gravy. And then, of course, you can follow me on LinkedIn. And I suggest clicking the follow button on LinkedIn rather than the connect request, because LinkedIn is, I have no words for why this is the way they do things, but they have a major limit on the number of connections you can have. So for people like me, it bites, because I'm just, I have a big limit on who I can connect with. So follow is probably a better way. And then my website, my personal website, is jebblunt.com, B-L-O-U-N-T. So jebblunt.com, and you can check things out there. But salesgravy.com is a great place to go, because there's just so much there, and our phone number's there, and you can call or text or whatever.
Perfect, perfect. We'll include all of your contact information in our show notes. It'll be listed on our website at prosalesconnection.com/podcast. And look, before I wrap it up, I just want to take a minute to thank everyone for listening. If you like what you're hearing, you want more incredible content like Jeb and others that we're bringing to the show, please go out to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, make a comment, let us know what you're thinking of the show. That's the only way more people can find us, and we think we're bringing high quality stuff to the market. So please take a minute and do that for us. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks for joining the Big Three of B2B Leadership. Have a great day. Thanks.
Pro Sales Connection is a sales and marketing firm that has been helping B2B companies grow faster since 2009. Learn more about our proprietary fastest path to revenue process for B2B companies. Experiencing the possibilities begins with a short 15-minute call. Schedule yours at www.prosalesconnection.com and click Get Started.